As a professional involved in electricity delivery, the T&D World Podcast and TDWorld.com is your definitive source for breaking news, industry updates, and more. We've got you covered from transmission to distribution and everything that affects the power grid. And now, on to today's episode.
Welcome to the T&D World Live Podcast. I'm your host, Nikki Chandler, Editorial Director for T&D World. And today we're going to be talking about one of the biggest issues facing the power sector right now. And that's the fact that electricity demand in the United States is accelerating faster than the grid can expand. And it really is the big topic at all the conferences that we're at, and even now in Congress and, of course, the government. So, from AI and hyperscale data centers to electrification, EV adoption and industrial growth, I mean, these are all the things that are contributing to that. Utilities and grid planners are really facing this level of demand growth that many of them haven't seen in decades, and I would see in their careers. And we heard that a lot last week at the IEEE PES convention. But at the same time, the industry is also dealing with transmission bottlenecks, supply chain constraints, workforce shortages, and questions around permitting and infrastructure buildup. So lots of things that may seem to be problems here, but also I think opportunities. So I'm excited to have Bridget Bartol here with us today. And she's Executive Director for Grid, focusing on regulatory and industry affairs at the National Electrical Manufacturers Association. And we're going to be discussing NEMA's recent grid reliability study, which is very interesting. I love that kind of study and that data. It's fun to look at. And then NEMA's newly released 2026 policy agenda, which outlines recommendations for Congress and the administration. So, you know, NEMA's really working to try to lead the industry and get some change going here and be able to solve these big problems that we have. So, Bridget, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Nikki. It's great to be here today.
Yeah. And we do, kind of before we dive into this report, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, how you ended up in the electrical industry and at NEMA, and, you know, what does that current role involve?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been in the energy, electricity, and policy industry for over 15 years, both in the private and public sector, most recently as senior advisor and deputy chief of staff at the U.S. Department of Energy. I've actually been at the Department of Energy twice, serving in a number of roles, but really supply chain and the intersection of energy is such an interesting moment that we're in. We saw this, you know, 100 plus years ago as we were building the grid. Now we have a relatively needed for modernization grid. I don't want to call it old, but it is needing a little bit of an upgrade and a build out. And this is the most exciting time to be a manufacturer that can help deliver for their customer. When I was at the department, you know, we saw coming out of COVID significant supply chain challenges and how that really snarls progress and trying to make sure things can find a balance between being built here and being built in allied nations. And so I was excited to join NEMA because we have 300 plus members that are really focused on delivering electrical infrastructure as well as software solutions to meet this growing demand. And as you highlighted, we have a new report kind of looking at what electricity is going to be going forward. And we have a lot of question marks too, but there are solutions available now. So we're really excited.
So, let's talk about this study, grid reliability study. And at a high level, what is the study and why did NEMA feel now was the right time to have this conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. So our business intelligence team has been worked with a significant number of consultants to try to bring together their own model so that they could take the insights from our members who represent the entire electro industry, but also look at the new trends that are arriving. You know, for a long time, utilities are the main customer, or industrial sector is the main customer for electrification. And now we're seeing a new entry point for, you know, driving demand. And how do we figure out how that impacts near and long-term manufacturing needs? How does that help with what decisions that utilities need to make? Think about the new technologies that are on the horizon. And so they took a step back and bringing in insights both from publicly available information as well as our members' insights They were able to develop their own model to try to track what's happening between now and 2030. And that's a long time away. But, you know, when we think about how fast the demand has grown in just the last 5 years, you know, that next 5 years is going to be a crucial point for meeting new electricity demand and also having the reliability standard that we have all become accustomed to. And so they have been able to really take a look at how can we answer the call to what do we need to address this once in a generation power demand growth. And that means we dug deeper with our partners, both in the distribution and transmission space, but also thinking about the software that can actually be a solution. And so pulling from EIA data, as well as other, you know, reputable sources and pairing that together, our experts here believe that there'll be a 55% growth in electricity demand between now and 2050. But we're one of the only entities that are going out that far. We recognize that, you know, after a 10-year horizon, there's a lot of questions still out there and how technologies evolve, how we use energy. But we see there's a clear certainty that the demand is going up and we need to be there to meet it. And since our members are the people who are delivering for customers, we want to have enough certainty to make those big investments, not only the ones we just announced over the last couple of years, but continuing to meet the need rather than waiting for it to show up.
Yeah, that's quite a number. And, you know, in the last year or so, we've seen different figures, but it seems like that's the one that everybody really keeps coming back to. So I think, you know, right now, that's definitely a legitimate concern or even prediction as far as that 55% growth by 2050. So what do you think is fundamentally different about this growth wave compared to what utilities have dealt with in the past? I know we had, you know, we've been talking about at the conferences, and even I've been in this industry for 30 years. So, you know, I remember that time when there was like this utility death spiral. Everybody thought, oh, utilities weren't really going to be able to grow. And now it's just crazy changed. So, you know, what do you think is kind of different now?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's coming down to more grid planning and figuring out how to move existing electrons where they need to go. So it's this mix of how do we make the most of the existing system while also building out for this new demand that we're seeing. And it's new demand, not just for data centers, which is, you know, a key driver over the next 5 years, but it's also residential, industrial, and transportation. You know, we're seeing more consumer options that are requiring more electricity. And we want to actually meet people where they are in terms of where the electricity can be generated and stored for when it's needed the most, or, you know, figuring out how a utility can work with its customers to make it through those really, you know, strategic peak demands, especially, you know, I'm here in the DMV area and we're experiencing our first, you know, 90 plus degree of May. And so that's going to be, you know, a key driver of when we can use some of these new solutions. And I think that there's been a lot of new creative ways for transmission operators to also think about what they can do to move more electrons across the system. We see in some regions that they already have, you know, operators that are strategically coordinating for new development or how to upgrade their system. You know, we see that happening in more regions now too. And I think that's a good thing as we see new players in the game on needing electricity and the way that they need the electricity.
Yeah. And I, you know, and I really have an optimistic view too, as far as our industry and the creative things that they do to solve problems. And so I'm pretty optimistic as well, you know, based on what you just said. So, I think it's just a great industry and the way they share with one another to help advance these solutions.
I couldn't agree more. Coming from the energy department, the collaboration in this industry is top notch, and the care for wanting to deliver reliability in a safe way and create new technologies, right? They're not stagnant. And I think that's a misconception for the industry. It really is a constantly evolving industry with new solutions that are coming up every day from both an efficiency perspective as well as new technologies.
Yay, you and I are on the same page here. So I agree with that.
Perfect.
So AI and data centers are really a huge focus in the report, of course. And so why are the AI workloads changing the electricity conversation so dramatically? And do you think people really fully understand how large this demand surge could become?
I don't think we fully know how large the demand surge can become, but I do think it's a real opportunity to push that creativity and innovation that this sector is known for, both the manufacturing sector as well as energy innovations. While utilities may not always be considered, first and forefront in creativity, the care that they take and the reliability and safety is so critical. And I think what's unique about this is that we've traditionally seen, residential or industry or transportation customers that have operated within the traditional utility model to get connecting to power. But this is a whole new ballgame. The speed to power is taking over, and it's actually resulting in some really creative ways to increase utility infrastructure in a more timely fashion. It's also re-emphasizing why pushes for, new transmission or distribution upgrades to be more resilient are important. But AI data centers, they just operate differently than a consumer at home. And, their spikes and valleys are much higher, and they can happen much faster. And that means certain kind of design considerations need to be taken into account when they're building, both connected to the grid. And, for those moving faster than they can be connected to the grid, if they're going behind the meter or not immediately connected to the grid, they have to make sure that they're still designing with safety and reliability in mind and have the same kind of redundancies to connect to the grid in the future. We know that right now the chip is actually driving creative innovations in the energy sector, and that means new types of infrastructure designs, many of which our members are helping to creatively be partners with their customers, both the hyperscalers and utilities, so that they have that flexibility and the interoperability we need to stay, keep the grid strong and more reliable on the other end of this. I think the biggest thing to take away from this is, AI is running really fast, and then it just takes a quick stop, right? Like, this is almost like a football game where they run to the like 10-yard line, and then they get kind of get stopped, and you get a break and a breather, and then you see the Hail Mary all the way down to the end zone. And I think that's a different way for our grid to have to exercise and use its muscles. But I think utilities, manufacturers, and hyperscalers are really committed to reliability.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. So yeah, I did want to ask about reliability for the data centers. Are we getting to the point where access to reliable electricity would really determine where data centers get built or expanded?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when you take a step back and you look at where data centers have been, and keep in mind, data centers literally help to run you and me talking on the computer right now, our bank transactions, the way we scroll on our social medias. But now we're seeing in a whole new way, right? The AI race is helping us. It's taken a lot more power than our day-to-day activities. And that's because we want to be, competitive globally, with this kind of technology, but it does require power. And so you've seen these clusters of regional data center development. And now that we're starting to see, maybe delayed upgrades or a lack of new generation in certain regions, you're feeling that squeeze. And so especially here in the Northern Virginia area or in Ohio and some in the Western US, and especially Texas, we've seen them kind of take a creative strategy to seeing this new demand come online. But they're always going to look for areas that have actual available power for interconnection. I think even data centers want that certainty that, if something happens on site, they have that connection to the utility that always has ways to find new solutions to get power consistently to their site or help them restore power when necessary. But we are starting to hear about, really they're only planning for one data center in an area, and they want permission to build in multiple territories, if possible, so that they can help meet that demand. On the utility side, we're seeing like some little blips of pausing or freezing data center interconnection. But I feel like that hasn't come to the forefront in a way that is going to stifle new development. I think you are seeing the timeline for data center development be shorter than the timeline for building out new grid infrastructure. And that's where we're going to have to find a tricky balance of making sure whatever is built without that certainty of connection, thinks about reconnecting in the future. I often think about industrial revolution. We had a huge push almost 200 years ago, on building factories, right? And those factories needed power and it was new, and they built a lot of infrastructure. But then they created a coordinated way to bring that infrastructure and deliver for the public good. Utilities are often thinking about how are we delivering for the public good in a reliable and safe way. We also need to see that kind of infrastructure build out in a way that has that public good on the other side of this massive kind of rush that we're seeing to build out infrastructure, because it really can have dueling benefits.
Yeah, that makes sense. So so your study, again, it makes the point that this isn't just generation. And you've alluded to a little bit about, you know, the advanced technologies and things like that as far as on the T&D infrastructure. But you do say it's also about the T&D infrastructure, the grid infrastructure. So how much of the challenge right now then is really about moving electricity where it needs to go, that, you know, that transmission part of it?
I think it's a solid 70 to 80% of the challenge that we're facing now. We have so much generation in this country that just cannot get out where it needs to go. Even on the existing systems where it is helping to bring it across, you know, we have new technology solutions that can actually help store energy or move energy further across the grid. And I think when you think about the transmission system, we're thinking about grid enhancing technologies as well as advanced transmission technologies. And that can include replacing wires with ones that can move more power through. It can include software or kind of sensor enhancing technology that can tell the transmission operator, you know, hey, you have a lot of available electrons over here. Why don't you free up this line and move it across because there's a lot of demand somewhere else. And that topology, like, is really important because it means that we can, you know, sense the wind and how hard it is pushing across the line and say, hey, cool this one off so that you can move more electrons. And that means that that's less generation that needs to be built in the near term, and allows for more breathing room, both for ratepayers as well as the utilities and operators to do those long-term investments, because energy infrastructure is a long-term capital intensive investment. The other thing that we look at is more at the consumer level, and that's really demand response. It's actually really an important tool. If you think about your home, whether that's your HVAC system or your smart thermostat, or maybe you plug in a variety of transportation or other household electronics that can actually create power and give back power, you know, those are opportunities for utilities to make the most of the existing electrons moving through their system. And on these really extreme days, whether they're cold or hot, be able to throttle in a way that does not disrupt someone's daily life. If there is available electricity that is not being utilized at an individual block level or neighborhood level, being able to pull that power in to balance the strain on the system is huge. And then, as I mentioned, you know, data centers move a lot faster than traditional grid infrastructure and even traditional consumer infrastructure. And so we are seeing more behind the meter, but the types of technologies that have evolved and been developed over the last decades are really contributing to more opportunities for more electrons. And I think we need to take advantage of that. And one, make sure that they're flexible on the other side. So when we think about behind the meter, you know, we're thinking about what's the energy storage system, either at an industrial site or and how is that married with generation opportunities at the site and being utilized in a way that can either give back to the grid or can be saved for a time when maybe they need that energy more than what the grid can provide. And so I think we're seeing kind of unique, creative ways, but we really need to get over the hurdle of adoption, especially for the transmission technologies, as well as that consumer level idea on demand response.
Yeah, so we have been talking about, you know, getting more out of these existing grid through these technologies. And, you know, you've mentioned some of them, but reconductoring, dynamic line ratings, digital substations.
Yeah.
What do you think are some of the biggest opportunities that utilities could deploy relatively quickest or quickly?
When I think about the scale of energy that can move fastest, I really think about grid enhancing technologies as well as energy management systems. You know, there really is this ebb and flow of the grid. It requires a balance. And the more you can collect and move electrons further and faster across the system, you know, the better you can deliver both reliability and affordability, right? Like, we've already created this generation. Let's make sure we're using it and getting it to the places we need. So those GETS technologies, as well as the ATS, as they call it. I think of it as the hardware and the software for transmission. That's going to be a real turnaround in a tighter timeframe than what, you know, traditional generation build out can be. And our report actually goes into some examples of like how long it takes both from a permitting and infrastructure development to full commercialization of power for new generation, as to what it means to apply an upgrade to the existing system. But that doesn't mean we can't build new transmission. There are pockets of this country that have tons of transmission or tons of generation trying to get out. We actually just saw a new transmission line in the Southwest that should be ready to go by the end of this month. And that's going to help unlock tons of power that has been generated, but can't get to the places it needs to go. And so there's real value in taking both approaches. In terms of the essentially demand response or distributed energy technologies, those are other great opportunities to hold power. And they aren't just confined to residential consumers. Industrial consumers are actually a great source of generating their own energy demand or energy to actually meet their demand. And so you're seeing more of that. And they can also play a real role in adding storage to their sites so that they can deliver back to the grid when they don't need that extra power that they're creating.
Okay. So yeah, going on as far as the strategy goes, the report that NEMA put out also emphasizes all of the above as far as the energy strategy goes. So what does that actually mean from NEMA's perspective, especially when it comes to balancing all of these things, the reliability, affordability, and then clean energy goals? I mean, we don't want to forget that part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And since we have so many more technologies than we had 20 years ago or 30 years ago when we saw that last demand growth, it really is about using everything that's available. So we have the kind of unique evolution of energy storage systems. You even saw the announcement recently of a auto OEM transitioning to grid batteries here in the US. That's a huge opportunity to make sure that more people have access to these kind of creative solutions, whether you're a commercial or a residential consumer that's looking to kind of play a part. And for utilities, right? It's challenging supply chains and making sure you're getting more competition to bring down costs. So it's great to see those kind of unique ways that we're delivering energy and delivering technology. And as manufacturers, we've made billions of dollars in investments just pre-COVID and post-COVID. And when we think about the amount of production that's happening in this country, you know, we've surpassed pre-COVID levels in terms of what we're producing. It's just the demand has not let up. And so we're thinking about all the software technologies like energy management and control systems that can help make the most of the pieces of equipment that need to move to make sure power can reliably get to where it needs to go. And we're also thinking about increasing the efficiency of these products. So, you know, our members are helping to be on the next stage or next frontier of new designs, both for, you know, key components like switch gears, which no one ever thinks of, but are helping to keep our lights and neighborhoods on. And then also thinking about these new wire techniques that are able to move more power and reduce risk for wildfires and new kind of technologies that are helping increase resiliency. Because as we see more extreme events, whether that's demand usage or, you know, heat or cooling challenges, even storm resiliency, there are new technologies and ways that we can make the most of our system and make it more durable in the long term.
Well, and I do think about switchgear. So anyway,
well, I'm glad someone does. I'm excited. Yeah. I love the switchgear. Yeah.
So, and you did mention storage. You were talking about behind the meter and things like that. Another theme of the study was storage and vehicle to grid technologies, which yes. A few years ago, we have a technical editor that loves this kind of stuff. And he says, well, you know, vehicle to grid, it's not quite here. But do you think we're finally getting close to this future where EVs and storage really do become meaningful grid assets instead of just load?
Yeah, I actually do. I think that we're at a point where that demand response I keep talking about, I kind of think of them together because I think it's really important for utilities and others to have the visibility that they need for what we can pull power from. That includes EVs and hybrids. It also includes HVACs, right? We have heat pumps or even traditional HVACs or solar systems on houses. How can we move that power to a storage system or work with, make sure the utility has a program that can help monitor at that level and know what kind of distributed resources are there so that we can make the most of it? Like I think of right now at my house, we have two chargers and a solar panel installation. And with no clouds today, I'm assuming that I'm going to be making a lot more power that I'm going to be generating when I'm not at home. And that's a great opportunity moving forward. And I think vehicles, now that there are more consumer options out there, as well as more infrastructure, it really creates an opportunity for both vehicles and everything that's distributed at your home that can create power or pull down its power usage. And that together is really what makes, you know, that virtual power plant of the future really work. And I think that some regions, if we think about how they're responding to the FERC orders, looking at distributed energy resources as well as demand response programs, there's still a lot more opportunity space for utilities to get creative and try to make the most of what's already out in the field.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely creativity here. So, alongside this study, and we talked about this, this is a really neat document that NEMA released, but it's a 2026 policy agenda. So, what are the biggest policy actions NEMA wants Congress and the administration to focus on right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I think about the big picture, you know, we have three priorities. We want reliable and resilient supply chains. We want to make sure that there's a business friendly and certainty approach towards production capacity increases. So when I think about that, I'm thinking about either consistency in tax incentives or permitting reform that can help give the certainty we need to continue to invest. And then we want to have a strong workforce. Because no matter how much investment we make, if we don't have a workforce that can stand, that can be ready and willing to get trained and retained, then we can't deliver on the product capacity that we have. And so right now, you know, we're working a lot on supply chain, especially one idea we have is a tariff incentive framework. So if you're already making domestic and investments, or you will be making domestic investments, helping to offset some of the tariff costs for some of the key componentry that isn't already made here, and being able to increase capacity and certain and help stabilize costs. That's really critical. We also are big proponents of the Rewire Act, and that's a key part of permitting reform. We think that there's real opportunity to unlock electrons across the transmission system while also giving certainty to new infrastructure. And so we continue to kind of raise our voices there and underscore how important it is, especially when we have this 5-year window based on our grid reliability report to really deliver on new infrastructure in a way that's going to set us up for the next few decades to stay competitive both at home and abroad. And then we also support, you know, workforce. And I think when you think about grid equipment, and since you love switchgear, you're going to like this, you know, transformers and switchgear really require manual work that for transformers, they need to wind and make those coils. That's not something that a machine can do all by itself. It really does mean the human touch, and it's something that we want to continue to attract and retain talent for. And switchgears, we're seeing unprecedented demand for this. One, because we need to upgrade our aging grid infrastructure, and two, because we have new players in the game that want power. And so, no matter the timeline, we're going to need to keep making those, and there's nothing better than making more of them here. And that requires a strong dedicated workforce that's both thinking about creative designs for new spaces, but also being able to assemble and put them together in a way that's reliable. And so one of the things we are promoting is how do we take veterans who are looking to engage in the manufacturing workforce and allow them to have a very smooth transition or skill building effort. And so it's called the VET Act, which is Veteran Energy Transition Act. And we believe that it could allow manufacturers to expand existing programs to make sure that there's a talent pipeline between veterans and manufacturers. We see a lot of talent pipelines between veterans and utilities, but we think that there's more growth for manufacturers and veterans to work hand in hand.
I will have to look that up. Maybe we can help out on the T&D World side as far as getting that publicized. But
that'd be great.
So yeah. So you did. So workforce development. I actually have heard this too, that it's getting very, very concerning as far as the lack of workforce and the direction we're going here and how quick we're going. In fact, I just recorded another podcast with James Merla of the North American Generator Forum, and they have some big concerns there, and they're working hard to figure this out. But, you know, how serious does NEMA think that those labor and skills gap, are right now? And do you think maybe some of the new technologies like AI could help utilities and manufacturers bridge some of that gap? I mean, I've heard that maybe this is the time for all of this to really converge.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one, there is a real disconnect between how many openings there are and how many workers we can find to go into different parts of the supply chain. And I think that's something that one, you know, we're taking a lot of steps on to increase the visibility of the electro industry and what a manufacturing job in the electro industry means, you know, getting to power your country, power your community, and doing so in a very like hands-on and tangible way. And when we also think about where we want to go in terms of AI, you know, there's a balance where we can increase production efficiency through either the design of the product to try to make it more streamlined or help meet a new need, but also in training, right? To streamline training of workers to save time between when they start to when they feel confident and comfortable in the job. And then also making sure that there's that retention aspect. And I think that that will, AI has major benefits in helping to reduce some of the administrative burden, but also some of the engagement challenges and allow folks to focus on what means the most. And that's recruitment, training, and retention. Mm-hmm. And we really see this as, you know, for a long time, our grid was functioning in an amazing way. And now we need to upgrade it and we need to build it out further. So this is kind of a new sector for a lot of folks. And that means getting to folks in younger grades, high schools, colleges, but also, you know, finding others who are maybe looking to transition into new and longstanding workplaces. And without the certainty of workforce and it's really hard to make bigger and bigger investments in capacity because you want to be able to fill all the shifts that this plant can produce. Because mm-hmm. that's really what makes the difference at the end of the day is how can we deliver for the customer and do so in a way that like makes those who are working in the facility recognize the value that they're bringing to the system.
Yeah, I mean, the scare the AI maybe take your jobs, you know, I don't hear this in our industry. I hear, you know, definitely this is not the case. We need more people. So
we do. Yes.
Yeah.
We want to fill shifts and we want to build more factories. So
yeah. Yes. And it's jobs all across the spectrum from, you know, operators, line work, all the way to, managers and engineers. So,
I tell my daughter all the time, I want her to be an electrician because there's 500,000 of those that we would be happy to help fill.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I tell my kids too, as far as, you can do vegetation management, you know, you can do anything. There's just so many Absolutely. Different things. So looking ahead 5 or 10 years, what do you think success looks like? And, you know, what signs would tell you the U.S. is actually getting ahead of this challenge instead of just reacting?
Absolutely. You know, I really think there's so much opportunity. I am a natural optimist in this sector because one, I really believe that the players in the supply chain care a lot about reliability and they care a lot about delivering for their customer and also, you know, like those who are using the system. But I think what I'd love to see is a more resilient system, one that is stronger than where we started from. It's upgraded. It has a bigger footprint. It's deploying and making the most of every electron on the grid, and doing so in a way that's lowering costs for customers, even though we have, you know, hopefully, I want to say doubled the size of the grid, maybe tripled. Let's see what happens. But I do believe it's possible to like break through some of these traditional barriers to infrastructure over the next few years and really come out on the other side sturdier, more durable, and able to deliver power in the new places it's going. Because we've even seen population shift since the grid was built. Now we're seeing new infrastructure shift needs. And I think we can meet both of those in a more reliable, safe, and affordable way.
Thank you so much. I think I want to end it there because that's a positive outlook, encouraging. And I agree with you 100% on that. So is there anything else that you'd like to add to our readers, our audience, listeners?
No, I'll just say, like,
yeah,
NEMA represents over 300 manufacturers across the electro industry from transmission to distribution. And, you know, while we are generation agnostic, it's our equipment and software that's helping to make sure that generation, no matter what it is working in a reliable and resilient way. And that's going to continue to be our mission. And we look forward to welcoming more people into the electro industry over the next few years because we're going to need them.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing insights on the grid reliability study and policy agenda. And it really is clear the industry is entering a period of tremendous change. Well, actually, we've been in it. And conversations like this are important as utilities, manufacturers, policymakers, and the technology companies work to keep pace with that demand, all while maintaining that reliability and affordability. And then working toward sustainability. So thank you to all of you for listening, and be sure to subscribe to the T&D World podcast for more conversations on grid modernization, utility operations, infrastructure investment, and the future of the electric power industry. Thanks again.
Thanks again for listening to today's podcast, produced by Endeavor Business Media, a division of Endeavor B2B. To hear the latest information for power delivery professionals and industry best practices, subscribe to T&D World Podcast and visit our website, tdworld.com, where you can find insightful articles and sign up for our free daily newsletter.